Okay. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our first virtual meeting of the Cabinet on Monday, the 20th of April, 2020. I will start the meeting at agenda item number one, which is to receive apologies for absence. Andrea.
We're all here, Chair. So no apologies.
Thank you. I can see that. Right. Item number two is declarations of interest. Does anybody have any declarations to be made based on the agenda? No. Are there declarations from any of the elected members? Thank you. Item number three is to approve as a correct record the minutes of the meeting held on the 16th of March 2020. Does anybody have any questions or comments on those minutes? Okay, in which case I would like to propose that those are approved as a correct record. May I have a second, please? Councillor Barker. Just get you to put your hands down. Right, I will go to the vote now. So, all in favour? Okay, so that's myself, Councillor Barker, Councillor Peters, Councillor Faulkner. Okay. Okay, so once I'm in a position to sign those minutes, I will do so. Okay. All right. Item number four is to consider any urgent business brought forward to the meeting under Rule 12. I don't believe we have any urgent business. Okay, we do not. Item number five is the forward plan, and Chief Executive.
Thank you, Leader. This is the forward plan from the 1st of April right the way through to the 31st of July this year. Clearly, it will be subject to the impact of coronavirus, and it will be reviewed at the next earliest opportunity. But in the meantime, happy to take any questions on the forward plan.
Does anybody have any questions on the forward plan? Okay. I think it's fair to say that a lot of the items in the forward plan, as the Chief Executive indicated, are likely to be significantly impacted as a result of COVID-19 and the current crisis. So there is obviously a significant degree of uncertainty going forward, which we'll need to monitor. Clearly, it is going to have a big impact, but what I'd like to do at this stage is just to take the opportunity to thank the whole ESBC family for their tremendous hard work in this particularly challenging time. I'd like to particularly thank the senior officers present this evening for all of their hard work in recent weeks, ensuring that our services continue to be delivered and that our residents remain supported. I know how hard you've all worked, and I just wanted to place on record my thanks for that. I'd also like to thank not just those here tonight, but also the council teams that have worked incredibly hard in their respective areas to support people at this difficult time. To the refuse teams who've been out on the front line every day. To the revenue and benefits and finance teams who've been supporting individuals struggling financially, and also supporting businesses to ensure business rate payments are stopped and the grant funding applications and payments are made. Also to the housing team who've ensured that all homeless residents in the borough have accommodation, which is really, really important. To the open spaces team, ensuring that our open spaces and our public spaces spaces are safe for all our staff. Our shielded residents with help to access food and medical supplies. Everybody really has gone above and beyond, and I'm very proud and very thankful for all of their efforts. So, you know, clearly the forward plan will be affected by this, but I know that hard work and determination and dedication of everybody in the council will ensure that we can continue to deliver in this difficult time. But I would, as I say, like to say a big thank you to everybody. Okay, I will move on to item number six, which is the scrutiny review of disabled facilities grants. And this item is due to be presented by Councillor Philip Hudson, who's chairman of the Scrutiny, Audit and Value for Money Council Services Committee. Andrea, do we have Councillor Hudson?
Sorry, Chairman, it doesn't look as if he's been able to log in at the moment, and I haven't heard from him. I know he was called out earlier on this afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. So everybody has had a copy of the scrutiny review report. I think if everybody could just confirm that they have received a copy and have read and understood it. Councillor Faulkner has. Councillor Peters. Councillor Barker. Councillor Ann, thank you. So the recommendations in the report are as follows. Actually, I should obviously first just say thank you to the scrutiny committee and the subcommittee who put a great deal of effort into this report. I would have liked to have thanked Councillor Hudson himself, but unfortunately obviously can't be here. So the recommendations are as follows. 7.1 is to set targets for each stage of the process. 7.2 is to adopt the audit recommendation to implement new procedures. 7.3 is for the corporate plan target to be reviewed. 55 days for urgent and 150 days for non-urgent cases. 7.4, the environmental health manager to provide quarterly performance updates for urgent and non-urgent cases to the Audit Value for Money Scrutiny Committee. And 7.5, to undertake a follow-up of the DFG scrutiny review within 12 months. So I'm just going to pause at that point for any questions or comments or observations on the report and those recommendations. Councillor Peters.
Okay, is that clear? Can you hear me? Yeah. I'm muted by the host.
I was trying to unmute you, Bernard, but you are unmuted at the moment. We can all hear you.
Thank you. Leader, I don't know whether you wanted me to... the way I read the document, it was headed questions raised by the scrutiny group. And then there were a series of recommendations that you've read out. As Cabinet Member, Deputy Leader, do you want me to make any comments, or shall we wait? Are you just throwing it open to everyone?
Throwing it open to everybody at this stage. Councillor Peters, yeah. I've got Councillor Barker, who's indicated he wishes to speak.
Yes, thank you, Leader. I think... it seems to me that 7.1 is already being carried out. couldn't understand why that was an extra one of the recommendations. But what I was going to ask Councillor Hudson when he got here, it says in section 4 of the report that everything is right, everything is in place, everything that's needed to meet the targets is there, but they're still not being met. And I just wondered what he found during his report that explained why the targets weren't being met.
Thanks, Councillor Barker. Obviously, we did have a cabinet report previously issued, which was appended to the documentation this evening. But I don't know whether Mark, do you want to just comment on that?
I think the report that the Environmental Health Manager produced in December and her support during the scrutiny report period identified the reasons why there were issues. I think these stem originally from the transferring of the scheme effectively from the Staffordshire County Council scheme to our own in-house scheme in April 2018. And in doing that, there were a number of issues that obviously arose that had, I think, had the most significant impact. I think it should also be said that at that time, the scheme itself changed. So the home adaptation company that was providing the works for DFGs also changed. So effectively, the whole scheme changed. And in doing that, they then produced a number of issues that the team, the living DFGs for ESPC at that time, came across and have been working since that time to rectify those issues. And I think the timescales between each stage that have been suggested are the home Adaptation Consortium guidelines, and they're the guidelines that we follow and will continue to follow, at least until we establish our own in-house system. So obviously, transition from early days to now, and obviously things are improving as we have gone along.
Thanks, Mark. I think in terms of what we've looked at before, it is an evolving and gradually improving picture, which I guess is obviously positive. In terms of the current situation in respect of the coronavirus, what are our expectations on how that will affect the service?
Sorry about that, some technical difficulties this end. In terms of where we are at the moment, the service is still being delivered, but as you might expect, there are two areas where the process has been affected. One of those is at the delivery stage end, where contractors are tasked to go out and deliver the works on site. Those effectively have ceased. There was a stage up until the last couple of weeks where those that were in progress were being finished off. Once they've been finished off, then there won't be any further works for the time being. So that's one stage. And the other stage is earlier on in the process, prior to the application stage, which is where the occupational therapists have to attend site to take a view on what adaptations are needed in the home. And those OTs at the moment are not currently doing that part of that process. But all the other stages from inquiries and between application and the point of contractors are still carrying on. So it remains to be seen, obviously, how long this period of lockdown remains as to whether we obviously get OTs back out again and can start constructing delivery companies to go out and do their works.
Thanks, Mark. Does anybody else have any comments or questions on this? Councillor Peters, do you want to make any observations as portfolio holder?
I think Mark captured, he's furnished you and I. I'm not sure whether the rest of the cabinet members have got the comments that we well, the answers to the questions that we've considered. I agree with what Mark has said. COVID-19 will play its part in all of this. And I think the question will be, how do we pick it up and run with it once we get through this pandemic? Because there'll be a lot of people there anxious for works to start and place households to be adapted. So I would like to think we can go along with the recommendations that Mark has shared with us. If you want me to run through them, I will, but the way ahead seems fairly clear to me.
Thanks, Dennis. So, in terms of the recommendations set out by the scrutiny committee, recommendation 7.1 was to set targets for each stage of the process. It appears clear from just having a look at the detail that there is. There is already a number of stages in the process that are already being monitored, and that's done at a national level where there's specific guidance. So in terms of that recommendation, it seems to be that we already have targets in place. Therefore, it would seem unnecessary at this stage to set specific targets that are different from those, but I would suggest that's something perhaps that we need to look at again in the future. Councillor, do you want to? I can either run through the rest of these, or you wish to make a point.
Thanks, Leader. If I can just unmute myself, yes. It was just on 7.4. Let me just get it. 7.4. It's basically to do with scrutiny, and scrutiny's good. It makes sure we keep keeps decision makers on the toes and makes sure that we carry on delivering what we're supposed to be doing. And in the case of DFGs, that we get an improvement, a rolling improvement. But there is a point at which sometimes too much scrutiny becomes counterproductive, and we spend too much time trying to performance manage, if you like, rather than actually trying to improve the service. And so I think I just wondered if I'd make it a suggestion to 7.4, instead of having a performance review every quarter, I think it'd be right that the manager or the head of service responsible can go and attend the scrutiny committee to give verbal updates, but not to have such an in-depth performance review other than 6 monthly. I think that's quite achievable. You know, I think that's too, I think it's a bit too much to expect to have a performance review every 3 months, considering the cabinet members will be on top of it as well himself, I should imagine, Councillor Peters. So it's just to sort of change that slightly, so that we've got scrutiny can receive a quarterly update verbally, but to have an in-depth performance review of how we're getting on 6 monthly.
Thank you, Councillor Allen. Councillor Peters,
yes, thank you. I'm grateful for Councillor Allen's comments, but I think in this first year, if it is the first year, we ought to stick with the recommendations, because we've inherited a system from Stafford. We're evaluating it. We're trying to make it work in practice. and unless Mark is clapping his hands at the prospect of Councillor Allen's recommendations, I don't know, but I'd like to stick with the recommendations as presented. I feel comfortable with them because it's a heckishly complicated process, and I think the more information we get at the timescales that we've identified, it will add value across the patch. So thank you, George, but I'm happy to have these meetings at the right time.
Thank you, Councillor Peters. Councillor Faulkner.
Thank you, Chair. Like Councillor Allen, I believe that there is a time and a place for scrutiny, and we don't want to be burdening our team with over scrutiny. I would support the fact that a verbal report goes into our scrutiny team on a quarterly basis, and a in-depth report goes in on a six-monthly basis. I can't see that there is any reason to object to that, because we are no doubt being informed if there are any problems by Councillor Peters, who is a portfolio holder and will be having his normal meetings, and he will raise any issues that may be around at the right time. So to me, the scrutiny level that Councillor Allen suggested is ideal in this situation.
Thanks, Councillor Pollard. Mark, can you just comment on those reporting arrangements and what your recommendation would be in terms of the timeframes and the level of work required to put into to giving those updates?
Sure. The reporting is on where we are with the DFGs at each stage in general terms is provided to Bernard, the Deputy Leader, every 2 weeks, basically. So we know almost to the day in terms of where we are at each stage of the process. I think what the scrutiny committee were after was an in-depth review of urgent and non-urgent cases, which I think, and just as supported by our agency, the manager, is quite a difficult job to do, because you have to make an assessment of where each case is in that step, at each stage, in terms of it may turn from a non-urgent to an urgent case, partly the process. And if you're reviewing it on a quarterly basis, it makes that decision difficult to do. Therefore, the proposal or the suggestion from the officer side was that a six-month review in terms of urgent and non-urgent cases was something that would be providing more worthwhile information, more valuable information. But having said that, we can give at any point in time an overall general update on in terms of where the process is. If you start being fine, where the officers have to make a decision about what the case it is, then it's more of an issue in terms of time to spend sifting out one from the other. So that's where the 6 month review came in, which I think is worthwhile doing, and I think it's valuable to do. But I think 6 months is probably more of a reasonable suggestion from our point of view. But there's no reason why a general update can't be provided in much more, certainly quarterly wouldn't be a problem, because we provide the information in a really reasonable way. Does that help?
That does. Thank you, Mark. Yeah. Okay. So we'll come back to that in a second. So I think in terms of just going back to the recommendations in order. Recommendation 7.1, and these are just from my perspective. So recommendation 7.1, I think we've already got targets, therefore it would seem unnecessary to set additional targets. In terms of 7.2, clearly I couldn't argue with the recommendation to adopt the audit recommendation and the internal audit recommendation on the implementation of new procedures. That makes very good sense. 7.3, which we haven't touched on yet, mentions putting in or amending specific times targets to the corporate plan, and that is 55 days for urgent and 150 days for non-urgent cases. We currently, in terms of the published corporate plan, which was agreed at our last council meeting a few weeks ago, the current corporate plan doesn't list any targets of this nature. So the corporate plan targets obviously can't be reviewed in that way, because the corporate plan target is slightly different. So the corporate plan target for this item is RCS 09, which is the Disabled Facilities Grants Review, and the corporate plan target is to complete the annual review of the Disabled Facilities Grants Service, which would include obviously a detailed review of all of the metrics and all of the numbers within there. So in terms of 7.3, it would seem, whilst we have operational targets to improve in terms of the corporate plan target, we probably wouldn't want to accept that recommendation, given that it's not really necessary, because the corporate plan target is different. It doesn't refer to those items. In terms of 7.4, which we've just touched on, so the environmental health manager to provide quarterly performance for urgent and non-urgent to the scrutiny committee. We've had a suggestion that perhaps that, and an observation from Mark there, that perhaps a full review quarterly is perhaps too much in terms of officer time and effort, but that a sort of summary quarterly, if I'm summarising correctly, a summary quarterly review could be accepted, with a more detailed review on a 6-monthly basis. And then lastly, recommendation 7.5 was to undertake a follow-up of the DFG scrutiny review within 12 months. Now, I understand from the process of the review this time that, because we also did a similar review to the one in the corporate plan target, there were two reviews operating concurrently, and I think that had some issues in terms of information crossing between the audit committee and sort of the scrutiny committee and our report. So in terms of undertaking a DFG scrutiny review within 12 months, we've got a review for December 2020. So it would seem to make sense that the follow-up DFG scrutiny review takes place after our review, so that we're not, and we get a clearer picture then that scrutiny are able to look at in more detail. So those are my personal views on those. Just picking up and endorsing a couple of the comments from fellow councillors. So I am minded to propose those, but happy to take any further comments. Councillor Barker.
Yes, I'm a bit in favour with Councillors Faulkner and Councillor Allen that I'd rather us be doing the work than reporting on it, but I want to be convinced and happy that Bernard, as the deputy leader with that portfolio, is happy with that. I think what Mark suggested is a fair compromise, really, but I just want to make sure that Bernard's happy with that.
Councillor Peters.
Thank you, Leader. Yes, I'm content. The way you summarised it back, Duncan, I can go with that. I'm grateful for the comments, and I've listened to them, and I think your summary captured my revised thinking, so I'm happy with that.
Thank you. I propose that we don't accept recommendation 7.1 because it doesn't appear that it's necessary, given we've already got the targets and that we are going to be looking at matters in more detail through the quarterly reporting and then a 6-monthly reporting to the scrutiny committee. I propose that we would accept recommendation 7.2, that we don't accept recommendation 7.3 because there is currently no corporate plan target which specifies times of this nature. And again, the recommendation later on around the quarterly updates will provide greater clarity over this. We do accept the recommendation of 7.4, but with those amendments that we've discussed, that they're done in summary form quarterly and in detail 6-monthly. And I would accept the recommendation that the scrutiny committee follows up the review, but that they do so after our review has been carried out in December 2020, which will be slightly longer than the 12 months suggested. So I would like to propose that we accept the recommendations on that basis. If I might have a seconder. Councillor Faulkner. So, right, I'm just going to put your hand there. Don't yourself. Right, all in favour of accepting those recommendations? Okay, that is carried. Thank you very much. Okay, right, we will move on to item number 7, which is the Washlands Enhancement Project business case and master plan. And Tom will be presenting, hopefully, if he's in the room. Tom, good evening, welcome.
Hi, Leader, thank you. I'll try to share my screen of the report, because that might make it a bit easier to kind of focus on the sections that we're discussing. So with that in mind, obviously this report sets out the final business case and the master plan for the project. I'll jump to section 5 of the report, which starts with an overview of the project as a whole. So the project overview under this section pretty much just highlights that the Washlands is in effect a functional floodplain, that as such it has certain significant limitations and restrictions in terms of how it can be used other than as a functioning floodplain. But through this project, certain proposals are made to deliver improvements that are suitable for that environment. So if I go on section 5.4, you can see some of the examples that we are proposing as part of this project, such as improved street furniture, pathways, lighting, and amenity enhancements. This project has approved funding from the Greater Birmingham and Solihull Local Enterprise Partnership of up to £1 million. And because it's a town centre area, it's significant in the context of the emerging work through the Towns Fund for Burton and the Emerging Towns Investment Plan. And so although there's nothing specific in this report at this stage, it's just important to remember that the enhancement of the Washlands will be taken into consideration in terms of that emerging work. Section 6 sets out the benefits for the project and how they'll be realised. It's difficult to quantify economic benefits for a project such as this, where it's essentially around improvements to open space and blue space. But this is fundamentally about an area of land being improved for public use, for an anticipated environmental benefit in greenhouse gas emissions and kind of low carbon initiatives, and that it will have ecological improvements as well, and that's expanded on slightly further down. If I just go on to sort of section 6.5 onwards, we met reference to some of the existing research around this kind of investment in the pedestrian pound study, but also giving some case study examples of where public realm projects elsewhere within kind of central areas have led to increases in footfall or rental values or other economic benefits. Obviously, evaluating case studies provides a good indication of the types of benefits that can be realised from these projects, but obviously that's no guarantee, and it's just a good indicator for a point of reference. 6.10 just highlights a little further about the ecological benefits talked about. So the Transforming the Trent Valley Partnership will be undertaking studies, ecological studies that will form baseline data for during the course of 2020. This is at this point I'll first mention, obviously this is the in accordance with the programme as currently planned, and this in particular doesn't accommodate any changes to that that might be realised as a result of COVID-19 or other external factors. Section 7, in reference to Appendix 1 and Appendix 2, talks about the master plan and the outline specification and the design principles therein, specifically for the central area, which is those areas highlighted by the bullet points on screen, which is effectively the area between Burton Bridge leading down to the Garden of Remembrance. So within the master plan itself and the first appendix, you can see some of the visuals as to how the area is intended to look. And the following table summarises Appendix 2, which is effectively the design principle set by the specification. And this covers kind of a variety of subjects, initially kind of landform and water concepts. And it's at this point it's important to make the statement that this will not prevent the Washtons from flooding. The Washtons is a functional floodplain and it will retain that use. This is about a specific area on the Washtons and about ensuring that the enhancements to that area are suitable for the environment. So the water concepts are about introducing water swales primarily, which will help the flow of water in the area. Soft landscape specification talks about different areas of the Washtons and the suitable planting for those areas based on whether they flood all year round, seasonal flooding, whether they're dry, etc. The hard landscape specification is fundamentally the types of structures that will be installed at the site. So the boardwalks, which is one of the features in the master plan, the principles of the street furniture, which will ultimately be in accordance with the public realm improvement plan and the other town centre work, the signage and cycle and walking routes that are being improved as part of the Environment Agency work and also in conjunction with the Triple TV, the lighting and the play area. Now there's a good play area on the Washtons already outside the library, and this is about turning that into a real landmark play area with schemes that are in accordance with its surroundings, so incorporating natural play, wild play and that kind of thing. It also sets out the principle of management and maintenance for the project, including the five-year maintenance budget for the area, and with any details of aftercare and warranties and such, depending on specific items that are installed. So this pretty much sets out a typical specification for this project based on the principles that have emerged through the landscape vision and the outline design principle. Design specification and the consultation that I'll come on to in a minute. And as such, it's still within the council's remit to make particular decisions in line with the principles set by the specification. So it might not necessarily be saying we need that particular type of bench installed in that area, but this is the principle that should follow if we install that bench. And we can expand on that a little bit more in section 12 of the report. So if I go on to section 8, this is where we talk about the Garden of Remembrance. Now, members may recall when the previous report was considered by Council in September last year with the outline design specification, it was proposed at the time to include the Garden of Remembrance in the works to the project to an amount of around £40,000. It's still proposed that work is retained within the project, but under section 8.3 onwards, we make the point that with the work that the council is doing separately through its towns fund work and its town deal board, there may be improvements to the town centre that affect this gateway onto the Washlands. It's not guaranteed at this point in time, but there may be that potential. So in order to maintain synergies there and to not do any work that might contradict the town's deal work, it's proposed that the Garden of Remembrance element of the project is delivered at a later stage in the programme. And that's achievable because it can be done in isolation. It's not dependent on any of the other work in the project happening at any given point in time. And so through this 8.5, it recommends that the deputy leader for regeneration and planning policy is the one who takes the decision on when and if that work is delivered towards the end of the programme. In terms of the programme and delivery options, Section 9 highlights that the council have been working closely with the Environment Agency and with their partner organisations in Galliford Try and Black and Veatch. And Black and Veatch in particular have been working with the council to develop this proposal, the documents that are appendix to this report. And so in 9.2, you'll see that the recommendation is that they continue to be involved through the delivery of the project and act as technical advisors to the council. In 9.3 onwards, we talk about the specific delivery options in line with the LEP funding. So the LEP funding programme closes as of the 31st of March 2021. So a condition of that funding is that that it is fully spent before that deadline, not just committed but spent. And so we came up with two delivery options, both looking at involving a subsequent year to the project as well, so ending in 2022. The first option was dubbed a single phased approach, and that is fundamentally delivering the project in a way that is natural to be delivered, so taking an approach where tasks are prioritised in a typical fashion. The second option in 9.6 is a two-phased approach, which is fundamentally about prioritising elements of the project in year one that have higher levels of expenditure, so such as the play area equipment, for example. Now that approach has a higher cost attached to it, of £37,150, but the reason for that approach is that it tries to ensure that the £1 million LEP funding is fully expended by March 31st. So by incurring that additional cost, there's an increased likelihood that more than half of the project budget is utilised. So that is our current recommendation. At this point in time, and just picking up something mentioned earlier, we are still obviously exploring the impact and the potential impact and anticipated impact of COVID-19 on the delivery of this project. That could be around undertaking the studies to secure planning permission, it could be about contractors being out on site, or it could be about sourcing the materials used for the project. And so as part of that, we are in continued discussion with the LEP about the funding deadline. So our recommended approach at this point in time is the two-phased approach. If the spend deadline is less of an issue in the future, then we would revert to the single-phased approach because that would make financial sense. Section 10, we talk a little bit about public and partner consultation. So this project's been in development for a few years, and it's been informed by a series of consultation events from the initial landscape vision, and that was considered by council back in 2018. And then towards the outline design specification work that council considered last year. That consultation has taken form through a number of mediums, such as physical boards and presentations at Burton Library, and having a story map on the council's website to inform members of the public of the kind of the story of the project. We've also kind of extensively consulted with appropriate partners as well, particular landowners, people like the Environment Agency, the County Council, the other people who are delivering projects in the area, such as the Transforming the Trent Valley Partnership, as well as a number of internal services. I'll just summarise under Section 11. We've also engaged Mawson Cores, as they are a landowner with some of the land that's affected by the project, and they've been engaged prior to this point and will continue to be engaged during delivery. Internal services, as mentioned, have been involved in the development, the planning service, open spaces, the leisure services at the time when the cycle routes were being developed. And members have been informed outside of the realm of the decision-making stages that have occurred, such as last summer through the a member briefing and the council induction session following the election. Because some of the elements require permits and planning permissions, we've already engaged the relevant authorities regarding that. So the council's planning service have been contacted regarding pre-application advice, and the environment agency have been contacted regarding permitting for working on a floodplain. Section 12 just summarises the Washington's member working group that emerged following the council meeting September last year, and the membership is highlighted under 12.1. The group have met a few times since, and they considered the final master plan in Appendix 1 in a meeting at the end of January this year, and provided a number of feedback points under 12.4 that are for Cabinet to take on board in the context of the decision-making now and the future delivery of the project, and anything at the end of the project in the future beyond. So we mentioned earlier that the specification sets out the principle for what has been proposed in the area, but there are still some specifics to be determined. And so we're recommending that the member working group is utilised to consider these options to make recommendations to the officers, and the officers can then use those recommendations to inform the advice that they will give to the deputy leader for regeneration and planning policy to consider and decide upon. And that's obviously within the constraints of the project budget and the design principles set by both what you're considering today and the council's own planning policy. Section 13, we've got the financial considerations. So in 13.2, there's a breakdown of the costs that are more detailed in Appendix 3. But then in 13.3 and 4, you can see how this compares to the report considered by Council in September of last year. So as a result of the further design work, this represents an increase on what was considered by Council in September of just under £130,000. But that was expected because the designs were still being developed, and that's why Council approved a higher provisional budget at the time so that this could be accommodated at this point in time. So there's a capital cost of 1.819 million and a revenue a maintenance budget over 5 years of 112,000. So as mentioned, the master plan costings are higher than the initial designs considered in September, but the requirement of council funding is still below the council allocation, both the initial allocation and the revised allocation that was approved in September, and that's detailed in 13.5. The works on the Garden of Remembrance are still included in these costs because that work is still being proposed at this point in time. And the five-year maintenance costs, the 112,000, have been accommodated within the council's medium-term financial strategy. So 13.9, you can see the funding that's available to the project, the 1 million from the LEP, the 1.05 million provisional allocation from the council, and that how this leaves remaining capital funding of £231,000. In 13.10 and 11, we're proposing that this funding is allocated to the contingency budget for the project, uplifting it from 2.5% to 15%, which is on par with the current Station Street project. Typically, you'd expect contingency budgets to be between 5 and 10%, but there are a number of unknown external factors and environmental factors to this project, and we feel 15% contingency in line with the provisional funding allocation would be suitable. So in 13.12, that's just summarised, it would be a budget of 2.05 million and within that a contingency budget of £272,000. Section 14 covers risks, which I won't go into in detail because there's a separate appendix for this, an appendix 4, but some of the key risks and benefits are briefly summarised in here, and obviously the emergence of COVID-19 has been taken into account and will continue to be taken into account on the appendix risk register. In terms of legal considerations, the only thing mentioned, as mentioned previously, is the that some of the land affected is owned by Molson Coors, managed by the council under lease, and as previously mentioned, they'll continue to be involved in the project as it's delivered. With that, I'll move down to the recommendations of the report under 19.1, which are for council to approve the final business case and master plan for the Washlands Enhancement Project, and that it moves forward with the aforementioned 2.05 million budget. That the proposed works to Garden Remembrance are put on hold until the towards the end of the project because of the emerging Towns Fund work. That the delivery is undertaken in a two-phased approach, which is included in the proposed costings, notwithstanding the earlier comment on moving to a single-phased approach if funding restrictions are not in place. And finally, that Cabinet take on board the feedback from the Washington's member working group and that the group continues to inform the advice that officers give to the deputy leader on future decisions regarding the implementation of the project. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions, leader.
Thanks very much, Tom. That's really good, really good piece of work. I think, as we're all aware, the Washlands project was a critical one for the future of Burton, for the future improvement of our town centre, linked with the Stronger Towns Fund. Clearly, the situation now and the likely economic impact of COVID-19 on our economy locally and particularly retail and the town centre, I think it makes this even more critical and even more important and a critical and necessary expenditure going forward. Does anybody have any questions or comments that they would like to make on the report? Councillor Peters.
Thank you, leader. A couple of observations and a question, if I may. Tom, thank you for that presentation. When you talked about 15% contingency, what percentage is it in that budget to cover the risks? Because you then moved on to the risks, which would have a contingency, would have an amount allocated. And I just wondered if it's 15% plus another figure equals the total of risk and contingency cover. That's my first question. Would you like to answer that?
Yeah, so the proposed 15% would cover all risk and contingency. It's notwithstanding, and it's worth mentioning, in line with the understanding with the LEP on the outputs and outcomes that we've committed to through the LEP, we have the ability to de-scope the project as well if there's any risk of overspending. So we can strip back certain elements if needed, if there's any kind of additional risk that isn't covered by that contingency.
Thank you. And the second question I had was to do with the existing woodland on the Washlands there that's described as the Burton woodland. I know it's involved several partners when it was first established. Is that part of the landscape enhancement?
It forms part of the wider Washlands programme in partnership with the Transforming the Trent Valley Partnership. So it's not specifically within the work proposed by this project, but improvements to that area form part of the wider programme.
Finally, thank you for the tree planting that's been clearly identified there, because that's significantly, that will make a significant contribution to climate change as far as I'm concerned. And I'm really, really pleased to see that there is an emphasis on tree planting. So thank you for that, Councillor Allen and the officer. Thank you.
Councillor Peters, I have got a question from Councillor Barker.
Thank you, Leader. It was more a vote of thanks to Tom for a great deal of work and everybody else that's helped him with it. And just to say that I think during the outcomes of the COVID-19, a lot of these timescales are going to be allowed to lapse. And hopefully, as you said, you'll take advantage of trying to do it in a single phase if you can. Because as an ex-farmer, you know, we try and get as better value for money as we possibly can, and I know you'll do the same. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Barker. Councillor Allen, as portfolio holder, would you like to make any comment?
Yeah, well, just to thank Tom and the team for bringing it this far, and no doubt they'll continue to deliver as they have done. He picked up most of what I was going to speak to, but I think it sells itself, really, this project does. It's the first one of the first projects that we started doing as part of the town centre regeneration. It's really important to the town centre. It'll enable relatively unused. It's a difficult to get to area, natural environment, natural feature. It'll make it a lot more open and easy to enjoy, but also, as Bern has pointed out, it'll enhance the environment and protect the biodiversity of the area as well. It's also, Tom did mention, it's difficult to see the economic benefits. I suppose it's difficult to justify the economic benefits, but it's obvious that this and together with the Station Street project is it clearly demonstrates our commitment to transforming the town centre, Burton Town Centre, in a way that we've not done before. And I remain convinced that without these two projects having been drawn up, they spoke for us when we put the bid into government for the Stronger Towns Fund Stronger Towns Fund, 25 million. I think it demonstrates just how committed we are to and determined we are to really making a change that we've not seen before in the town centre. And not forgetting the member working group as well. That'll be a really important part of the project, bringing it forward, bringing it through, making sure that the community, the Burton community, have had an opportunity to input into the finer details, and be very much looking forward to working with them and seeing the project come forward to the next stage and enjoying it when it's finished.
Thank you, Councillor. Does anybody else wish to comment? No? Okay. So the recommendations are as outlined in section 19 of the report. I'm not going to read them out because they're quite long. So I would like to propose that we accept those recommendations as outlined in the report. Can I second Councillor Allen? All in favour? Okay, that is unanimous from the Cabinet members. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you, Tom. Okay, we are now on to item number 8. So I move that in accordance with section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, that the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it is likely, in view of the nature of the business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there would be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraph of Part 1 of Schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets before the item number on the agenda.